Hey there. Welcome to the Speak and Flow podcast. I am so glad you're here. This show is for leaders who care. Leaders who know that when things get messy, the way we communicate makes all the difference. Every week I sit down with incredible guests, founders, VPs, rising stars to unpack real moments of today where communication matters. We talk about what works, what doesn't, and how you can lead conversations that create trust, movement, and momentum. Because in uncertain times like today, your words have weight. Let's use them well. Let's dive in. Welcome, dear listeners, to the Speak and Flow podcast, where we slow things down just a bit to help you communicate with clarity and confidence. Each episode is just 20 minutes long. We're going to give you some practical communication tips in response to current events that are happening at your work and in your world. Today, we're talking about communication within generations, so generational disconnect and conflict at the workplace. Did you know that organizations are losing around $56 billion in productivity because of generational disconnect? That's new research has shown. And so today's conversation, I brought to you an expert. He's a trial and litigation attorney and partner at Hans Lozier and Parks. Welcome, Gabe Wright. Hi, Gabe.
Hi, Melinda. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining. And so I'm going to launch with this one first question. When someone listens to this episode, what do you hope that they can change in their lives?
I would think that the biggest takeaway I would want a listener to have after listening to this conversation is, you know, some tools and strategies for talking and bridging the gap between generations when they're communicating with each other. You know, with the younger generations coming in and Gen X and the boomers being in a different slot, that bridge is getting wider and we need to connect it.
I love that. And you're experiencing that at the law firm, and you have a nationwide law firm that supports complex litigation. And you're seeing that happen. And so before we jump into that, can you share with the audience a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure. I am as you noted, I'm a litigation and trial attorney and a partner at my law firm. I've been doing it for about 25 years. In my current firm, I've served in a number of roles, including my firm's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. I have served as the litigation area chair for the San Diego office, which is where I'm located. And I presently serve on the board of directors for my firm. So those experiences have given me a unique perspective on dealing with the generational differences in my office and organization.
Well, and so as you are working in the law firm and you're seeing more younger generations come into the law firm, how has that changed the culture or the organization?
So I think you start where the older generations are, which is, you know, even when I came on board as an attorney 25 years ago, the concept was, you know, this is my first and last job. I'm going to stay here, die at my desk, get my gold watch, you know, right before I go, kind of thing, if I manage to retire. And the younger you worked, and it was just something you did, you know, everyone was just committed to doing the job. And the younger generations that are coming in have a different value system. Okay.
Right.
And that value system really involves, they prioritize a work-life balance. Okay. But at the same time, the economic pressures that we're feeling in society, the ever distant goal now of wanting to buy a house or a condo is becoming harder. They're also very financial driven. And so this commitment to the organization that you start with is not necessarily there, and they're more focused on making as much money as possible while the work-life balance that they wish.
Yeah. Which is very different from the previous generation's culture. And that's just, we put in the time, we put in the effort, we put in the years and the blood, sweat, and tears before we get this money and upgrade financially. And so, how have you seen that communication play out within the organization?
So it becomes difficult. We can go in a number of directions with this, okay? And so I guess I'll go with three things here. Number one, the younger generations interestingly want they want guideposts, they want benchmarks, okay? Which is not something that we historically have relied on. It's about bringing the whole person and giving your all. So they want you to give them those benchmarks to shoot for, which is as opposed to the flexibility that we've used to have. At the same time, they're not as open to criticism, directness. And so it's delivering the message when there is a difference requires a little bit of finesse. And then the third thing is that I think that they're coming in with sort of less of a practical understanding of how business works and the operations of the business. And so having direct conversations with them, not implementation of policies to try and control them, but more having direct conversations with them about the organization, how the organization works, is I think what creates buy-in and helps to ameliorate those generational differences.
And have you, it sounds like you're highly emotional intelligent, but across the board with the law firm, have you seen people leave because there's this communication gap or generational gap? Or do you think people are frustrated or they're just not as productive?
So I'm not going to speak to my firm specifically, okay? But I will speak to what you're hearing in the legal community, okay? And I think that the legal community, there is a frustration by the older generations of the lack of commitment from the younger generations. I think that there is a higher what we call attrition rate, where we're younger. The younger attorneys are much more willing to move. They're, 10 years ago, if somebody had made three moves in the first 5 years of their career as a lawyer, they were a questionable hire. Now it's an ex it's one of those acceptable practices because you know that they're making those jumps in order to try and increase their compensation and positioning.
But you do question, though, they're making the jumps because they're switching out law firms, but then are they really learning? Are they just quitting before they're really getting the experience?
So one of the
Curious.
interesting things, and I think that this is a big factor, is a lot of the societal things and the historic things that have happened to us in the last 10 years. And so this generation is they've gone through this really economic recession, the Great Recession in the 2008, 2009, 2010 time period. They went through COVID, and those events had impacts on them professionally. Jobs were hard to find, so they were coming in at lower compensation levels because they just wanted to get their foot in the door. And then a lot of them risked losing their jobs when COVID hit. Some law firms really knee-jerked and just laid people off. And our organization didn't. We managed to keep our people in place, but and so there's a justification for the moves they're making. But I agree with you, this constant moving, I think, does affect them long term professionally, because the way I see it is the practice of law is an apprenticeship. Okay. You're no different than Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo. Like you've got to be with the masters and learn the process. And as you stick with your person, you develop as an attorney in these rapid moves for money, while they will get you incrementally more money, I'm not sure the long play really works for them.
And how does the AI factor into this? Are you seeing the younger generation adopt it faster and the older previous generations not as quickly? How does that impact the organization?
I'm sorry, I missed that question. Can
The
you?
AI, how's AI impacting the firm? Are the younger generations adopt, who's adopting it faster, and is it supporting the organization with revenue generation?
The younger generations by a long shot.
By a long shot.
And I think that the older generations are suspicious of it. I think, and you could see it in news articles that come out are not effectively deploying it. So you get attorneys that are getting sanctioned by courts for what we call AI hallucinations, citing cases that don't exist and things like that. Whereas the younger generation absolutely knows how to leverage it, knows really how to speed things up. And I think that that is like the key place where the younger generation really is the future. Because of their adaptability and their willingness to adopt AI into their workflows. But sometimes I wonder if it also, almost puts them out of the job, in the sense that, what may have taken three associates to do, I can do it with one who knows how to leverage AI.
And that'll be probably true. But then I think that the person that adopts quickly on how to use it with their emotional intelligence, with their communication skills, can rise to the top.
And that's I think that that it that statement is key as far as I'm concerned, because the use of AI, one of the things the younger generation does is they also rely on more informal lines of communication. They're more willing to text you, they're more willing to communicate via email, and I think the face-to-face conversation, even picking up the phone and making a phone call is becoming a lost art. And so I think you've absolutely nailed it that as they leverage AI to their advantage, being able to have that emotional intelligence, that ability to sit down with somebody and have a face-to-face conversation, that's where you're going to see your future leaders arise.
And how does it impact the older generation with working with the younger generation if they don't agree
In
in
terms of
terms of
AI,
AI?
so suspicion is where it is, because where I think that the blind spot or weakness for the younger generation is that they lean on AI as almost the gospel. Okay. So, hey, I run it through the AI engine, this is what it's saying, or this is what it's aggregated. And then somebody like me, who's got a ton of experience, can look at what they've produced and go, it actually there's a miss here. It's not quoting this right. It's not interpreting the statute correctly. So they need to learn to leverage, it's like trust but verify, in a sense. Yes, it is a faster way to do it, but it is not entirely a reliable way to do it. And you still have to use your brain. And AI, at least to date, one thing that AI can't do is read the room. And that's an important function, I think, not just in my practice and what we do as lawyers, but in any business. You've got to be able to read the room, know who you're dealing with. And that always plays into your communications, your objectives, your business goals, and AI is just not going to cover that.
And when does it become a legal risk? Is that when it becomes legal risk for the organization when the younger generation is using AI in this fashion?
And that's really a big concern that we have, and why I think you've seen some relatively slow adoption to AI, because we're trying to figure out the boundaries, because the young generation's, exclusive reliance on this results in an increased risk of error. And in our profession, that error can be really consequential.
Exactly. And how do you teach the younger generation the art of reading the room, communication skills?
So this, I think this leads into another sort of generational difference aspect, which is this, the concept of work from home. Okay. And when you work from home, and like we're able to have this conversation here on a podcast, but one of the things that tends to get lost, even just when you're doing video, is being able to take the temperature to be able to in real time be able to discuss how things are playing out or working out. And so what I've done is with the attorneys that work with me, they sit in on my phone calls with opposing counsel clients. They sit in on depositions and meetings, and that allows for in those downtimes when we're taking a break, when the mediator leaves the room, when we get off the phone with the other person, this discussion, this debrief about, okay, do you understand why I did it this way? Do you understand why I made that pivot? Do you understand why I raised my voice or took a step back? And explaining that to them, because it's having that context from those of us that have had to do it face to face for the better part of our careers, is what is educating them. And that's what makes it an apprenticeship. You've got to bring them in on your decision making process in order to help them develop that emotional intelligence and the ability to read the room.
And that can take a long time. Going back to what you're saying, especially the values that they have, they're coming in, they want to rise to the top, they want to have financial stability, and then they also want to have work-life balance. All of these skills do require experienced and boots on the ground and debrief, like you mentioned, and thinking about all the complexities and different ways to respond to people and how they're reacting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so when you say to them, this is the reason why you're not XYZ making this much money, what would they say?
Well, so that's probably the biggest conversation I have with them. Okay. And what I have found is that not necessarily carrying the flag of the organization or pushing organizational culture is what gets the younger generation to buy in, but helping them understand sort of their context in the organization. And so that involves, for me, an explanation of financials. Okay. And it's not, hey, opening up the books and saying, here are the books, here's what goes on. But what I have found is, they understandably come in and say, hey, I want to be able to come in at this time and leave at this time, not have to work on the weekends. I want my guaranteed vacation time, all these other things, but I also want to make as much money as you, Gabe. And what winds up happening is a conversation about financials. And I will say to them, okay, here's how much money we can make on you when you do what you do the way you do it. And here there's organizational overhead. And all of these other factors that I have to keep in mind, the taxes that we have to pay, the health insurance we're covering for you, all of those things. And then I get them to agree, as an organization, we do have to operate in a profit, right? Yeah, we do. Okay, so taking all that into consideration, if you made as much as me, where does that land the organization? And I would say 100% of the time, and 100% of these conversations, the light bulb goes off. Ah, I see. If I want to make more money, I have to contribute more. I have to be more invested. I have to, elevate what I'm bringing to the table. And they get it, and they get how they operate. And then there's a flowback from them, which I think is important, and which is why this conversation winds up being valuable to me, because they'll look at me and say, oh, okay, I understand that, and I see what you're saying, but I think that, for example, you could raise my rate higher, and we'll talk about that. And I've had that conversation, and we've gone back and told clients we're moving this person's rate up, and now it's generating more revenue for the firm, which enables me to meet their needs in terms of compensation and what they're looking for.
Wow, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of because you're also handling complex litigation, and then you're also bringing up this newer generation workforce. And it's a balance of both. It's a multifaceted here.
It is in the role. I think that when you do what I've done for as long as I've done it, it becomes the new normal. But I really, it's I think to be a successful organization, it's not just about money. It's about buy-in with your employees.
Yeah,
And
I agree.
so the time is worth it to be able to sit down with these people and have these conversations and understand, because I'm not gonna be here forever. But my goal is to retire at some point, and we've got to groom the future leaders.
I agree. I mean, if they're going to be our leaders, it is going to require that time to groom them and try to find some compromise or ways to talk to each other and communicate with each other so that you could bridge the gap and move forward together as an organization.
Absolutely.
That's a wonderful. Thank you so much for your conversation and your insight and experience. And last question, what do you want our listeners to take away? What is that one key takeaway?
Oh. Face to face. That is probably the most key takeaway. You're not going to bridge this gap through email. You're not going to bridge this gap through new policies or rules. You're going to bridge this gap through a conversation. S sit down with them, take them out to coffee, have these open meetings where they can provide their own questions and feedback. And that is going to be the quickest way to get an understanding, to get buy-in for your organization, and bring those generations together.
Yeah. There's something about face to face
Absolutely.
that even if you're from a different generation, there's a connection, and then you're able to hopefully some way, as long as there's trust and respect for each other, find a way forward.
You're dealing with humans. I mean, that's it, it's about making that connection.
Well, thank you so much, Gabe. It was a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, Melinda. Thanks for having me.
I learned a lot and really sitting down to think about what it means to have these generations within the workforce and how do we communicate with each other more effectively to toward a common goal. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for joining. I trust that you got your takeaway for today. And remember, anytime you have a chance to communicate, you also have an opportunity to move us forward in a positive direction. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye. Oh, there it is. Thanks for tuning in today. If this conversation sparked something for you, if you're thinking, we talk a lot in our organization and things still fall through the cracks, we're not getting the results that we want, I've got something for you that might help. It's called the Accountability Self-Assessment, and it takes less than 60 seconds. In one quick review, you'll get real insights as to why accountability and results are slipping on your team. And you'll walk away with a legacy accountability card. It's a simple one-pager framework to help you and your team move talk to traction. Because the legacy of you and your team is built more than just meetings. It's built on clarity, consistency, and follow-through. So grab it today. Go to speakandflow.com or click on the link in the show notes. It's free, fast, and built for busy leaders like you. See you next time. Until then, keep communicating with impact and momentum.